You're listening to Heartspeak Podcast, Episode 10, Thriving, Not Just Surviving Cancer.
Welcome to the Heartspeak Podcast, where valuable insights are shared that bypass the mind and resonate with the heart. Listen, open your heart, become inspired, find the joy and fulfillment that awaits when you follow your heart. And now, here's your host, Dr. Christine Page.
When I developed breast cancer several years ago, one of my first thoughts was, wow, my soul must really love me to present me with breast cancer. Now, I appreciate that wouldn't be everybody's first thought, but I have spent over 30 years teaching that illness is not a weakness or failure, but a message from the soul that something has to change. My soul knew that I needed something big in order to listen. And I see that with many people. It isn't enough just to have a headache. You have to vomit as well. It isn't enough to complain of a backache. You have to actually be laid out so you can't move. It isn't enough to say, my heart isn't in my work anymore. You have to have a heart attack. Sometimes, or maybe often, we're so stubborn that however strong the message is, we won't listen until something dramatic happens. Do you recognize that? Do you see that in yourself? I certainly see it in me. And I've seen it in so many clients. Because when I've said what was happening when you first got ill, they say, I know why I have cancer. I know why I had a heart attack. In other words, this knowledge was there long before the appearance of symptoms or the dis-ease began to create problems. Now, even though I had this amazing thought, wow, my soul really loves me, it doesn't mean that I wasn't faced with the emotions of grief, because the world as I knew it was ending and being swept away, and I was being faced with an unknown future. I think that's so underestimated, so negated often when we are faced with a diagnosis. We all know that if someone dies, we face grief. If we go through a divorce, we face grief. Even if we leave a house and move to a new one, we face grief. If we lose a job. But when something happens that causes a crisis in our life, it is basically saying that the expectations we had of our future are now shattered. They have disappeared. It's as if you built a sandcastle and all of a sudden a huge wave has come in and just swept away your sandcastle. The very things that you created to create, to define yourself, identify yourself, have now gone. And that is part of the stress that comes with any crisis. And I know that PTSD is a real issue for many circumstances, but often I see a lesser problem when we are traumatized by the fact that our expectations are no longer going to be met. In other words, the more we have expectations of our world, being able to control our world, of being able to create our world, the greater sense of loss are we going to feel when that doesn't happen. And so I see people who have an expectation of their life just flowing the way they want, crashing. And that is, you know, I've seen it in cancer. I've seen it in women who have postnatal depression. Often there is a sense of, but this is the way I expect it to go. This is what I wanted. And it isn't happening the way I read in the books or read online. Why is this happening? And I feel that this, I'm just kind of moving a little bit there to say, it isn't to say don't have expectations, but change is very important to our lives. And the more we hang on to the old and not allow the new to happen, the greater the stress we'll feel when we are diagnosed with cancer or with an illness, or something happens to us that we cannot control, like a new baby coming into our home. And I feel that that is part of why we often hear people describe, I'm battling cancer, I'm struggling with cancer, I'm a victim of cancer. again, this sense of something outside me has caused me not to be well. I do not have control on my life. I do not have control on my health. And so it can no longer be possible for me to control this issue. I need to go and find someone else to do it. Is that the reason then that I talk about the message of disease and the soul developing the disease? I feel so strongly that we didn't come into this earth as victims. Now, you may well say, well, I would never create a disease or a situation in my life. You know, why would anybody do that? Well, no, I'm not going to say I fully understand everything that I see in clients and patients and people I meet. But if we start with the idea that this is happening to you and you basically had no part to play in its creation, then it puts you in a very, very difficult place where you end up having to survive and fight and battle something that is outside what you consider outside your control. And I'm not prepared to go there, because when I have done my 40 years of working as a doctor, I can clearly see the lead up, the circumstances, the factors that were in place that could well have contributed to the onset of illness. And these are not factors that are necessarily external to us, such as what we eat, how we exercise. These are factors that have been developing inside us for so long. So understanding cancer, you have to understand it from its very pathological self. And there are many different facets, and I don't want to say there's only one way or one facet or factor that leads to the onset of cancer. And I won't deny the fact that it may well be what you've eaten or what you've drunk or the environment outside. But the inner environment is just as important. And we need to consider all the factors. So here's just one example. When we look at cancer cells, we see them as immature cells that are not living up to the rules of when to stop developing, when to stop growing, when to stop expanding. So every other cell reaches its limit and it says, okay, now I'm stopping. Cancer cells just keep replicating or expanding or moving into places that they don't belong. So they're often, in my mind, like rebel cells, rebels. That part that says, I'm not going to do what you keep telling me to do. I'm just going to keep spreading throughout the body. I'm going to cause mayhem. Now, in my thinking, often an illness will express a part of us that we haven't yet owned. So just as an example, is there a part of you that has never rebelled? Is there a part of you that always has been a good girl or a good boy? Is there a part of you that's always nice and helpful, but would never ever do anything to rock the boat? And this is very much part of the cancer personality. And you might say, oh, come on, there's not a cancer personality. Well, there is. It's being called a type C. And it's being called and described as a pathologically nice person. And in truth, in my 40 years of working with patients and clients, I've met those people. I'm one of them myself. You know, 85% of people who develop cancer are nice people. Okay, the others aren't. But the fact of the matter is the majority are nice, kind, helpful people. And one of the things that I noticed that when I went through my radiotherapy for my breast cancer was that I was developing a lot of pain because of the radiotherapy. And I mentioned this to the technicians and I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And again, I apologized. I'm in so much pain. And they said, oh, we can do something for that. We've got something to help you. And I went, oh, my goodness. You mean you were just waiting for me to ask? Why didn't you tell me? And they said, oh, you should have just said something. I said, you obviously don't understand cancer patients. Cancer patients will not ask. They'll suffer. They'll put up with something. They'll think of somebody else's problems rather than their own. And I know that because for many years I ran cancer support groups. And in those cancer support groups, there would be people just, all of them with cancer, or maybe with clients, or with relatives with cancer. But they would all be nice people. Or, can I help you out? Can I get you some tea? Can I make you some sandwiches? They were always serving other people, never getting angry, which is another part of the cancer personality. So being a nice person isn't always a good thing. And I'm going to describe how this comes about. The second piece that I've just mentioned also is they find difficulty, or we find difficulty, being angry. And it's so interesting. I remember a woman who had cancer, and she said to me, you're wrong. I'm a very angry person. I can be really angry at everybody. You know, if you knew me, I'm always shouting. And then a little later, we described, or she described her relationship with her mother. And I said, do you ever get angry with your mother? She went, oh, no, I'd never get angry with my mother. In other words, you may well find it easy to be angry with certain people, but there may be individuals who you just never would disturb. And I know that in myself. I can have very good boundaries when it comes to my work. But when it comes to my relationships, not necessarily my intimate ones with my husband, but my ones with friends, I may go along with them. I may put up with something. And I recognize that so clearly when I developed breast cancer. And so coming back to that experience, I did, when I was diagnosed, cry and scream, but I never felt like a victim. I never saw my body as the enemy. I never battled cancer, called myself a survivor of cancer. I have always seen cancer as a wonderful gift, and I've grasped that gift with both hands from the start, which meant that I've thrived from cancer, not just survived. I'd always heard, and maybe even taught, that breast cancer was about a lack of self-love. But I quickly learned that it wasn't just that I didn't love myself in terms of maybe taking myself for a massage or taking time out for myself. I'd actually lost the self that needed loving. I'd stepped away from my own inner needs to meet the needs of others. And this I see as a fundamental issue for many people who develop cancer, not just breast cancer. One of the intriguing results of developing cancer was the reaction of other people. My husband, understandably, was upset for many reasons, one of which was the uncertainty of our future, and the other was his helplessness to know what to do to alleviate any suffering. And I think that for relatives of someone with cancer, it's so important to own your own helplessness, because it's almost more difficult to deal with than it is for the patient who's going through the different treatments. I will say, and I want to say just at this point, that if a patient goes into a treatment program, whatever that treatment program is, whether it's orthodox or complementary, there is a period of time, maybe a month after all the treatments stop, that there can be a depression. Because while you're going through the treatments, something's happening. You're feeling that someone's helping you. And when they're finished, you don't know what to do with yourself. It's almost as if, and I know the hospitals will say this, okay, you're cured, go! And it's like, how do I do that? So when I was a general practitioner, we used to run not only cancer support groups, but also ongoing cancer support for individuals, because it isn't easy to continue your life after going through such a life-threatening illness and just be told, go away and enjoy yourself, you're cured. You have to adapt. There's a huge period of adaptation. And also there's fear that until, you know, years have gone by, maybe it's going to come back. We all go through that, and that's perfectly natural. I was bemused by comments that I received from some people. I think the ones that really got me were, I'm shocked or upset by your news. I never was too sure how that was supposed to help me. Interestingly, when I said something to some friends like, wow, you know, that person had said that, I was immediately told, oh, I should be more understanding of the stress that I've caused them. And I should therefore be more understanding. And I thought, this is exactly the problem, that cancer patients are always thinking of other people. I can remember a woman saying to me, I can't tell my family that I'm dying. It would only upset them. Or I can't let my husband know because he's so busy and my children are so busy with their careers that I don't want to cause them any concern. This is a time to concern them. I can't say that strongly enough. The idea that we would keep something as big as this away from our family out of a concern that they're going to be worried or upset is just ridiculous. And this isn't mere martyrdom. This is a true belief that other people's lives are more important than ours. And I can only say that I've seen that in myself, and I'm sure that anybody who's listening who has developed cancer or had cancer probably knows the same situation. Now, am I a nice person? Well, you know, you might not say it all the time, but I definitely describe myself as a pleaser. I'm eager to make a good impression. I want to be helpful. I don't want to make waves. I can remember times where here I was, I'd been really good at keeping harmony around someone, and then maybe I'd stand up for myself, and they would say, oh, where's that nice, obliging, easy person? I don't like this one that's actually a little bolshy and stands up for herself. And what I realized when I developed breast cancer was that because I'm so intuitive, and I see this in many people with cancer, I was able to read people's needs. And I wouldn't say that my family was dysfunctional, but there was a lot of emotion around. And so because I saw this emotion, I felt this emotion, I decided that what I would do is read whatever was needed to keep the family calm, to quieten everybody down. I'd be a good girl. I was the youngest. So here I was watching everybody else and saying, okay, I can create a better environment that's being created at the moment. And so I merged with people. I merged with the needs of my parents, maybe even the needs of my siblings or people around me. I found out what they needed, and I fed it back to them. That's called manipulation. And I'd be the first to say that a pleaser is also a manipulator. Because what we're trying to do is say, tell me what it is you need me to do, and I'll do it in order to quieten you down. It's what I can do to please you. So I learned that as I went through life, I was still using that ability to read people's needs. And so when someone might say, well, what would you like to do? I'd say, I'll go along with you. I'm easygoing. And I was easygoing, but there were times when I didn't feel that what I was being offered was what I wanted to do. And I didn't always have the voice. Now, I want to say that what I learned about myself, and this is very personal, but it may well resonate for some of you, that it wasn't so much that I would just go along with people. It's I knew that if I upset that other person, there would be such an emotional discharge that I didn't want that discharge to hit me because I was already distressed by the energy. Of course, the hardest for me was the passive-aggressive person. I didn't like when people shouted at me. But actually, I learned that actually being shouted at was easier than having someone in a mood or not talking to you. And so you may well know that in yourself, that what do you do to keep the moodiness down? What do you do to create an easy life? And that may well be something you learned in childhood. It may be something you do around certain people. By doing that, what we do is we keep away from our own anger. We really want to stand up and say, stop doing that. Let's, you know, be honest. I want to be honest with you. This is not acceptable behavior. And believe me, since I developed breast cancer, I am saying that more and more. I'm much more forthright. But I recognized how I was scared of the reaction to my standing up or my assertiveness with certain people. And I've learned since the cancer to really say, you may not understand why I'm saying this, or I may not always understand you, but I need to say this. And if this makes our friendship collapse, so be it. I wonder, I hope that this is something that you may see in yourself. Over time, I found that with my cancer, I was able to express myself much more clearly than ever before. And I found that it was actually a way of just clearing out friendships that were holding together through a sort of emotional dependency, a dysfunctional dependency, and it had all this stickiness. So I got rid of a lot of sticky relationships because of my cancer. And I thrived from that cancer because I listened to its messages and decided to treat myself with greater respect, whatever the cost to my relationships. I remember this wonderful woman who came to see me years ago who had stage 4 brain tumor. And she'd been told by the doctors to go away and just really die. And she decided, she said, she was told she had 2 months to live. She said, okay, if I've got 2 months to live, I'm going to get rid of everybody and everything that no longer works for me. I've only got 2 months. So she took her money out and she had a good holiday. She got rid of the son who was in his late 20s living in her house. She said, go and take, you know, get your own house. Take your laundry with you. Go and do your own washing. I'm not going to be that mother. I don't want to do that anymore. She got rid of an ex who was hanging around. She said, I'm not, you know, we got divorced. Go away. And she put on her voicemail, her answering machine, you know, unless you've got something really cheerful to say to me, don't even leave a message. Well, you know, 2 years later she came to see me. She said, I've no longer got brain tumor because I actually said what I needed to say. She said, okay, I haven't got any friends because I told them what I wanted to say. No, that's my piece. But the fact of the matter is she found her voice, which she'd never had. She spoke her truth. And she allowed herself to feel the anger about how people were disrespecting her and misusing her. So therefore, I really see that that was something I learned. It wasn't just loving myself by going to have massages. It was loving myself and respecting myself and honoring myself enough to not worry about other people's feelings. That was huge for me. I was prepared to actually not be merging with their feelings. We talked about this in the last podcast in empathy. I was willing to say, you can have your feelings, I need to have mine. So how do we thrive from cancer? I listen to myself. I listen to my heart. Because, you see, having faced my own death, I realized that losing a few friends was not a big deal if I was actually going to live. In other words, if I'm going to live, let's do it in style. I don't say yes as often as I used to. I say, I'll think about it. And I certainly don't say, I'll come back to you, or we must get together, if I don't mean it, because I don't want to get together with that person. So I'm very careful now about closing doors immediately rather than leaving loose ends. I'm much more honest. And I've stopped manipulating people to please them, because that's really none of us want to do that. And if people's own noisy emotional chaos becomes too much, I just say, I can't deal with this and I'm off. I don't stay around that. So I hope I've given you some ideas for yourself, not just because you may well have had cancer or have cancer at the moment, but to prevent cancer. We don't need to be pleasers. We don't need to be dependent on other people's emotions to survive. And I don't want to just survive. I want to thrive. So here's to my beautiful body, my beautiful heart, which have never let me down. And until next time, remember, listen to your heart, speak your truth, and thrive.
Thanks for listening to the Heart Speak Podcast with Dr. Christine Page. Remember to check out other episodes in the podcast archive section on www.christinepage.com. And do share with friends, family, and colleagues. Join us next time for another edition of HeartSpeak.